The president met this afternoon at the State Department with members of his national security team to discuss the fight against ISIS and the state of the larger war in Syria as a key deadline approaches tomorrow for a cessation of hostilities. He spoke to reporters moments ago.
Now, none of us are under any illusions. We're all aware of the many potential pitfalls, and there are plenty of reasons for skepticism. But history would judge us harshly if we did not do our part in at least trying to end this terrible conflict with diplomacy. If implemented, and that's a significant if, this cessation could reduce the violence and get more food and aid to Syrians who are suffering and desperately need it. It could save lives. Potentially, it could also lead to negotiations on a political settlement to end the civil war so that everybody can focus their attention on destroying ISIL. And that's why the United States will do everything we can to maximize the chances of success in this cessation of hostilities.
Now, what are the realities for a potential halt to some of the violence and delivery of much-needed aid in Syria? Chief Foreign Affairs Correspondent Margaret Warner reports.
There were definitely mixed signals of progress before tomorrow's midnight ceasefire deadline in Syria. Aid trucks rolled into the rebel-held Damascus suburb of Ghouta yesterday, long besieged by the Assad regime. But in Syria's east, a UN airdrop of food went awry. Earlier in the week, Russia claimed its pared back bombing against U.S.-backed rebels.
Russian aviation performed no strikes in these regions where we have received or are continuing to receive claims to cease the fire and start negotiations.
But today there were reports of Russian bombing of rebel-held areas in Syria's northwest and regime bombing in a suburb of Damascus. The last-ditch agreement, brokered Monday by the U.S. and Russia, called for a, quote, cessation of hostilities. It exempts operations against ISIS, the al-Qaeda-linked Jabhat al-Nusra, and terror groups on a UN list. The Syrian government of President Bashar al-Assad has signed on, as have some rebel groups. But the major Saudi-backed opposition group said it would commit to just 2 weeks.
To be frank with you, we do not trust Russia. We do not trust this regime.
And U.S. ally Turkey said it wants to continue hitting Syrian Kurds linked to Turkey's Kurdish terrorists. The day after it was announced in Washington, senators pressed Secretary of State John Kerry.
I just hope it's not a rope-a-dope deal. Well, look, I just hope.
It may be. I'm not going to vouch for this. I'm not going to say this process is sure to work, because I don't know. But I know that this is the best way to try to end the war, and it's the only alternative available to us if indeed we're going to have a political settlement.
Many Syria experts are skeptical, too. Robert Ford, former ambassador to Syria, resigned in 2014 over the president's refusal to arm the Syrian rebels. Now a fellow at the Middle East Institute in Washington, he also teaches at Yale.
Secretary Kerry has made huge efforts, but it's too early to say if it represents any progress. The ceasefire is going to be a huge uphill. The Russians and the Syrian regime have incentives to keep fighting. I don't think the war is over by any means.
But Prem Kumar, who worked on Syria on the National Security Council until last year, says it's an important first step.
It's still an important process that will hopefully lead to increased humanitarian assistance. And then longer term, if the process holds, to discussions about the longer term political issues that have bedeviled Syria for several years now.
He thinks it marks a welcome evolution in U.S. thinking, away from regime change.
What's really important about this recent initiative is that I think it begins to shift from one in which the U.S. and its partners were trying to increase pressure on Assad to negotiate his own departure, to trying to freeze the conflict, provide humanitarian assistance, and set up a process to address the longer-term political issues.
What's caused that shift? The sudden insertion of Russian bombers and advisors late last September.
The only right way to fight international terrorism in Syria and on the territory of the states neighboring it is to act preemptively.
For months, as Secretary Kerry negotiated for a Syria peace process with Russia's foreign minister, Russian bombers were dramatically tilting the battlefield. 5 months ago, the rebels were gaining ground. Now Assad's forces have retaken key areas in the west and surrounded Aleppo, Syria's largest city. And the Islamic State has expanded in the east. Ford sees Russia, along with Iran, Turkey, and Saudi Arabia, all backing different fighting elements, as exerting far more leverage now than the U.S.
Russia absolutely is in the driver's seat, and the Americans are watching the car drive by. The Americans are becoming basically irrelevant.
Former French Foreign Minister Laurent Fabius said the U.S. lost credibility when it didn't follow through on President Obama's threat to strike Syria for using chemical weapons in 2013. He added, one doesn't get the sense that there is a very strong commitment. And obviously, the Iranians and Russians feel that. Indeed, Mr. Obama repeatedly resisted calls to arm moderate rebel groups, as he explained to the New York Times in 2014.
It's always been a fantasy, this idea that we could provide some light arms or even more sophisticated arms to what was essentially an opposition made up of former doctors, farmers, pharmacists, and so forth.
Mr. Obama's advisors say he feared arming inexperienced rebels would draw the U.S. down a slippery slope of deeper military involvement. But Ford says the president's unwillingness did just that.
I think that their inaction put us on a slippery slope. Frankly, we now have American military personnel operating in Syria, Margaret. None of us wanted that in 2011 and 2012. In 2013, but now we're flying combat operations against the Islamic State. Not Syrians taking care of it, Americans having to help Syrians take care of it.
And in fact, the administration is now asking Congress for additional funds for those operations. So what happens if this ceasefire fails? On Tuesday, Kerry hinted that deeper military aid could be forthcoming.
There is a significant discussion taking place now about Plan B in the event that we don't succeed at the table.
Foreign Relations Committee Chair Bob Corker was dubious.
There is no Plan B. Russia knows there'll be no Plan B.
I saw Secretary Kerry talk about a Plan B. That's nice. We'll see if there's anything there.
Kumar said there is the possibility of giving the rebels more powerful weaponry or creating safe zones inside Syria. But even he doubts how much more the president will do in his remaining 11 months.
I think it's unlikely that the administration is going to do a 180-degree turn in its policy on Syria. But I think if the president begins to believe that there is progress in sight and that the U.S. needs to do more in order to achieve an end to the conflict, then I think he would be willing to consider it.
A long road ahead that depends heavily on what happens this weekend. For the PBS NewsHour, I'm Margaret Warner.